This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode is brought to you by Ocean Thinkers, a social enterprise on a mission to inspire the next generation to learn more about our ocean and make an impact. Through events, apparel, and the membership-based Ocean Thinkers Club, this mum-led initiative is all about helping children tackle ocean conservation head-on. You can shop their beautiful limited edition apparel range and join the Ocean Thinkers Club now at oceanthinkers.com.au.
If you've been following the journey of Amelia Lamont, you'll already know that she is an absolute hoot. And if you haven't been, well, you're in for an absolute treat. She's real, she's raw, she doesn't take herself too seriously, and yet she's managed to build the midwife mama empire while raising four children. And here she tells us all about it. Why she still works as a midwife, even though financially she doesn't need to, how she's built the midwife mama into what it is today, and what it's like to go from the mum that never wanted to return to paid work to becoming the primary breadwinner. I hope you have as much fun listening as I had recording. What a gem, what a story. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the hilarious and humble Amelia Lamont.
Amelia, something that I think we often miss in our connection of all of this motherhood stuff is how the fourth trimester relates to the return to work. You're a bit of an expert in the fourth trimester. How do you find the link between the two?
Well, I'm well out of the fourth trimester now with my fourth baby, but oh my God. So you're so right. If you have a really good start to the fourth trimester, it kind of sets you up for the rest of the year, doesn't it? The rest of motherhood. So as we know, the fourth trimester is the first 3 months after you have your baby. And as you know yourself as a mum of two, how exhausting, tiring, exhilarating, wonderful, chaotic it can be. Now, I'm a real, raw, authentic mother, midwife. And when I send my patients home from work, I'm very realistic and I tell them how it's going to be, which is going to be hard. It's going to be lovely, but it's going to be hard. But the way to get through that is obviously with a village of people, like if you've got some grandparents, great friends, all of that kind of stuff. So to answer your question, how it can assist you in a greater return to work and, you know, that kind of stuff, if you don't have a good village to start with, which a lot of us unfortunately don't, that transition back to work is going to be really quite challenging. So I think how it goes is obviously setting yourself up with as much support as possible and giving yourself time, not rushing back to work if you don't have to. So obviously we start in the fourth trimester and then after that you go from like 3 to 6 months, 6 to 9 months, 9 to 12 months. And most women these days are returning to work sometimes as early as 6 months. So I really feel like if you have a solid, supportive fourth trimester, I think that's going to help you get back to work easier. I think if you are struggling in the fourth trimester, which most of us actually do and isn't talked about enough, it can make that transition back to work a little bit trickier.
And do you think it sets us up to ask for help more? Because I often think that we almost should treat mothers when they return to work the same way we treat them when they have their new baby. It's this massive transition. You're tired.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Treading water.
So this is like, I just feel like it breaks my heart. Obviously, so many women choose to go back to work earlier because they actually like it. Other women, their hands are forced and they have to go back to work because obviously we live in a country now and in a world where money is sparse and everything is so expensive, right? So I feel like we're so vulnerable, at least for the first year postpartum, right? Obviously, initially the first 3 months, but it doesn't stop there. So yeah. I think when we do go back to work and when we have to make that decision to go, we need more help more than ever, don't you think? Mm. Like, obviously, absolutely. Yes, in the fourth trimester, I harp on about that. But also when we return to work, we're juggling more balls than ever before. And especially if we're forced to go back, we don't want to go back. So our hearts are already really tender. We're stressed. So how can we make that easier? By obviously leaning on our village, like you said. And if we don't have a village, by creating one somehow, one way or the other.
Before we get to your journey, I think something that comes up for so many is, but how do we create that village? So before we go back to the start of your motherhood career trajectory, how do you go about creating a village if one is lacking?
So, well, you know what? I did another podcast recently and I spoke about this one patient that I looked after, and she will always be in my mind. She was a twin mum and she was, I think she was Iranian, and she came here and she was a solo parent delivering twins by herself with zero support. And I'm saying not one, or she had one friend, which was a work colleague. She had one friend here because she was new here. She didn't have one family member here and no one knew that she was having a baby. It was very taboo. Anyway, so she's come into this hospital, this beautiful lady, and I'm thinking, God, you look so successful. You look so prepared. And she's like, I'm a single mum. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, I'm having twins. I said, okay, so who's here to support you? Normally mum or dad will come from the other country. Oh, no, just me. No one knows. And this is my work friend who was like her support person. And I think like, shit, like how is she going to make this work? So this is what makes me think, how can someone like her build a village from nothing? So this is when we sat down and I said, now listen, when you go home, you're going to have the help of the maternal child health nurse in Australia. They come to you, see how your baby's gaining weight, check that you're okay postpartum. So I think they're a really underutilized resource in Australia. I know, you know, a lot of people say, oh, my health nurse was really awful to me, or I didn't have a great experience. I'm really lucky. I've had wonderful experiences. But I think we need to rely on them more to help us build our village.
Because they can also put you in touch with services
yes.
and whatnot, can't they?
Yeah, and they're a wonderful resource. And they are the first ones to go, hey, I don't think this mum's actually coping. I think yeah. this mum needs a little bit more support here. Let me direct this mum to, you know, social services. Do they need a bit more help there? Do they need a mother's group? Let's try and implement them into a mother's group. So this lady always brings me back to this moment because I always think she's come here and she's making a life for these twins on her own with nothing but one friend. So obviously that friend was a wonderful support for her. But then down the track, we touch base on Instagram and she's like, oh, I'm doing really well now. You know, the twins are three and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, how did you go? And she goes, well, I went to the mother's group. I've got beautiful friends now. She goes, I personally won't have any more babies, but I've got a wonderful support. So I think just starting with a health nurse, taking on that play group or that mother's group, you know, I never did one because I was really lucky at the time that all my friends were having babies at the same time. So I didn't actually need one. But I'm like, I should have probably done one because it's also another avenue of friends, isn't it? There is so many social things, you know, you can attend. There's things outside of work, you know, you can stay in touch with your work colleagues. And, you know, when they offer to catch up, take the offer.
Yeah, that's great advice. So let's go back. Speaking of work, I'm imagining that you always knew you wanted to be a midwife. Tell me.
Yeah, so you know, it's really funny. How old am I now? 38. My God. Fast forward to when I was a really young child. I still like want to be an AFL footballer. How funny is that?
Love that. I can see the passion.
But this is when, like, girls, like, we're only just starting to do AusKick, and girls playing football and sport was, like, so no way ever is that going to happen. Anyway, fast forward today, there's girls playing footy. I would have loved to have done that. But I was always going to be either a radio announcer, a TV presenter, a footballer, or a mum. I was always going to be a mum. And, you know, you go back to my school stories and they're like, what do you want? When I grow up, I want to be a mum. And they're like, yeah, but what else? I'm like, I just want to be a mum or play football. All of that kind of stuff. So, no, I always wanted to be a mum first and foremost. And then it wasn't until I never thought I was smart enough to do midwifery. Like, I was never a very big academic in high school. I was, you know, the socialite, the party animal in the classroom, not the naughty kid, but, you know, a little bit like that. So I thought to myself, oh, I can't even sit through this exam. How am I ever going to get into uni? So I just put that aside. Would have loved to have been a midwife, but it was never an option. Anyway, fast forward, did my VCE. Just passed my VCE. And then I remember I was working in construction, not football, not radio, not TV. I was working in construction as a personal assistant to the director of the company. And I was out on the construction sites and I'm like, do I really want to be doing this? Like, I'm going out doing site visits with my boss. This isn't me. I want to do midwifery. And my mum's like, oh, you know, it might be a little bit challenging. You haven't really did your visa. I'm like, mum, I'm just going to try. So I applied as a mature age student. I had to write this really big essay, submit endless amounts of paperwork, and lo and behold, they accepted me and I fucking passed really well. Like, I did really well. And I just
and
can't
believe it.
Imagine
the, like, world without you in it. Like, so many people on Instagram would be so sad.
I am living proof that if you actually put your mind to something, I don't feel like I'm a very smart person, but maybe I am really. And if you put your mind to it and you follow your passion, you can make anything happen. And I did. And I worked really hard and I qualified as a midwife and then I became a mum and then the Instagram came and then my mammoth business behind me now, and here we are 4 kids later.
Wow. That, I reckon, would give a lot of people shivers, because I even have a lot of friends that, like, genuinely adore you and who, when I became pregnant for the first time, were like, you have to follow the midwife mama. So for people to hear that and go, that might not have happened, is amazing. How old are you when you start studying, and what happens when you start working? Does it feel like your passion?
Yeah, so I was 24 when I started my course, qualified by 28, had Alfie at 28 and worked. So went back to work after maternity leave at 10 months with him just casually, and then worked, and I felt pregnant with Essie when Alfie was 12 months old. And then from then on in, I've just been dabbling in midwifery, going in and out, because obviously being a stay-at-home mom has been my priority, and I've been lucky to be at home with this business. But I don't even remember what you asked me now.
That's fine. We're going to keep this in, because this is what happens with mums that have a lot of things going.
I've gone on a tangent now because I'm so passionate about it. But when I returned to work, it was absolutely wonderful. And I think it made me a better midwife, because I had that motherhood experience behind me. Yeah. I'd say I was a really good midwife before I had a baby. But after I had a baby, I just felt like I had that little bit more empathy and passion and those tender nipples. And I was like, oh, I feel that now. All of that kind of stuff. I know what you're going through, but that being said, some of the best midwives actually don't have children, and I work with many of them, and I'm like, do you not want kids? They're like, hell no. I go home and that's it. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Is it the only children I want? The ones here?
Yes. Yeah, the ones here that I can hand back. But yeah.
Wow. And so you are pregnant, I'm guessing, then, for sort of your first year of working in the field. Motherhood and midwifery often feel like a very good combo and an obvious combo, and there can be flexibility when it comes to returning to paid work. But how did you feel about how you would navigate work and motherhood when your baby actually did come into the world?
So, you know, the first thing I said when I gave birth to Alfie, the very first thing I said, I put him on my chest and I said, I'm never going back to work. I just couldn't. And Ambrose is like, you're a psycho. You just hold your baby. Is it a boy? Is it a girl? I'm like, I'm never going back to work. The thought of going back to work made me feel sick. I was like, I can never leave my child. That instant protection, that how could I ever dare part with him? And then back then, you know, Ambrose and I, we had a house, we had a big mortgage, which felt like a big mortgage back in the day, which isn't a big mortgage now these days. We were battling, like, we were really, you know, Ambrose had his own business, working a million hours a week. I was a first-time stay-at-home mom. We were down to one wage, and I felt the pinch of the pressure of going back to work. And I remember I always said I was going to have 12 months off. And I remember Ambrose saying to me, you know, at the, you know, 6 month mark, oh, you know, sometimes people say it's really good to go back to work, like, one day a week just for you, you know, you as the mum. And I'm like, you're telling me I need to go back to work? And he's like, yeah, just maybe one day, babe. And I'm like, no. Anyway, lo and behold, it was the best thing I ever did. I don't think I've ever got the push to go back to work, and we had to. I didn't have a choice. My hands were tied. I wouldn't have ever gone back, but I'm glad I did, because kept me in the game of midwifery. It made me actually a better mum and partner, because I got to fill my cup up at work, and it made me appreciate Alfie so much more when I came home. You know, when you're in the thick of it, you're like, oh, I'm tired. I don't want to go to the park. I don't want to do this. Oh, all I do is breastfeed all day. Going to work and having that break and coming home was lovely. Wonderful. Yeah.
And so then you're pregnant pretty soon after. And I think this might also be when your Instagram starts to take off, or when you create it.
Yeah, so I started my Instagram when Alfie was 4 months of age, because I was a stay-at-home mum, and my friends are like, you know, you should do an Instagram, because we all ask you for mum advice because you're a midwife. And I'm like, oh, what do I know? I just went to sleep school. What do I know? So I started it then. But yes, lo and behold, when Alfie was 12 months old is when it started to get a lot more interest, and people were, oh my God, I so relate to you. And then I fell pregnant unexpectedly. I hated Ambrose at the time for doing that to me. You know, that wasn't planned. Anyway, lo and behold, we had 2 under 2. And I think that's when it all really came to fruition, because I was battling, I was struggling. I was like, this is fucking hard. This is actually torture. And this was not in my plans. And, you know, I was hit with postnatal anxiety. And I'm like, ugh. And Instagram was really my safe space to come up for air and relate to other mums, because mental health was so taboo then, you know, like even 8 years ago, people were like, oh, I don't have postnatal depression. I don't have postnatal anxiety. And I'm like, it's not a big deal if you do, because most people do. A lot of people had it undiagnosed. And so, you know, there I was putting my face on there saying, I'm fucking not coping. This is so hard. Ambrose is working. We are drowning. And that's where it all began.
Was that a surprise to you that it was challenging? Because I think for me, really similar to you, in that I was always the one holding the babies. I was the babysitter. I always wanted to be a mum. I think every now and then when I found it hard, or unfulfilling in like a moment, obviously, in the grander scheme of things, I love it, but some moments just suck and are boring and all of that stuff. Did it ever catch you by surprise? Because sometimes it surprises me when I'm not enjoying an element of motherhood.
Yeah, I think it annoyed me more than anything that I couldn't get my baby sleeping. I thought I am the baby whisperer like yourself. You know, I was always the one babysitting. I was always the one nursing the babies and getting them to sleep at family gatherings. I got my kids' babies to sleep at my own. I couldn't get to sleep. And I think that kind of sent me a little bit senile and made me lose a bit of control. And I thought, I suck at this shit and I'm not enjoying this. This should be fun. And then when I went to sleep school, Alfie started sleeping. I got my experience. I then went and certified myself as a sleep consultant, and it made me gain control back. And I thought, like, this is how motherhood should feel. It should be exciting. It shouldn't be as challenging as it once felt. Yeah. But yeah, like you, you can't, you think you've got it all together, but you don't, do you? Yeah. Like, you, there's, and I no just, one you does. Can't prepare for that. No, no one does.
That's an interesting thing you touch on, because sleep school can be a really divisive topic, and it wasn't anything like you expected it to be. Tell us about your experience with that and then how that led to you adding sleep consultancy into your work.
Yeah, so I had a girlfriend who was like, hey, I just went to sleep school, like go to sleep school. And I was like, no, I can do this on my own. I know what I'm doing. And turns out I didn't know what I was doing, and I was just falling deeper and deeper into sleep deprivation. And after 6 months of literally 1 to 2 hourly wakings overnight, I was like, I remember my dad actually saying to me, oh, just go, would you? Just go. Like him knowing how much I was just drowning and trying to keep it together. So I went to sleep school. It was the best experience of my life. It wasn't anything that I thought it was going to be. It was nurturing. It was supportive. It wasn't cried out. It wasn't all this crying like I thought it was going to be. It was more acknowledging and getting to know my baby and following their cues and not shoving the boob in his face every time he cried and all of that kind of stuff. So that really ignited my passion with sleep and maternal mental health. And then from there, I qualified myself and I was doing back-to-back consults at the time with my business partner. And then we were like, oh, we just can't keep up with this demand. So then from there, we had girls reach out and be like, hey, you've inspired me to be a sleep consultant. Where should I study? And then, you know, naturally that industry started to take off. And then from there, every sleep consultant I've hired to date that's qualified, obviously they're all qualified, has been through my Instagram platform. That have come to me, and I've obviously they've got known experience and they're really good at what they do and they're passionate about it. So they've joined our team. And then from there, we've got like 6 consultants now that work sporadically for us Australia-wide, and it is just insane.
That's incredible. As I've already mentioned, it's a divisive topic. How do you figure out whose sort of methods are good and whose are a bit more sort of harsh and not what you would recommend?
Well, you can tell straight away when you meet a consultant and you interview them what they're about and where they're from. And you can see on their platform from their reviews as well. And every consultant that I've hired has done the same course that I've actually done. So I know what it's about. I know how they're certified, their beliefs, all that kind of stuff. But also it comes down to customer feedback. You know, you give them a consult, and if you, you know, along the way there has been other consultants' reviews where they've been like, you know, they get 1 or 2 bad reviews and I'm like, hold on, I've got to reassess this. This probably isn't aligning with what we're doing. I thought, you know, maybe they did do the same course as us, but maybe they just aren't as good as what we thought they were, maybe not as patient. So yes, there has been a few consultants we've dropped along the way that kind of didn't align, but our team now is so solid and they've been with us for like 3 years. So it's been amazing. And I actually made my sister Georgia do the sleep course as well, because she was like, oh, what am I going to do now? I don't want to go back to work. I'm like, go and qualify yourself. You'd be really good at this. And anyway, she's an absolute gun. And I was just saying to the girls, I went and got a massage yesterday, which is, this is what I do to fill my cup up. And I sat down in the chair and then this lady sat next to me with her baby in the pram, and I was just, you know, getting ready to get this massage. And she's like, oh, hi. And I was like, hi. And she's like, oh my God, I follow you. That's so awkward. I'm like, no, no, it's not. It's lovely. Hi. And she's like, your sister Georgia has saved my mother's group. Anyway, from there, I was like, you know what? This is what, and I went home and told Ambrose, I'm like, this is what it's about. This is community. You know, this random lady is telling me, showing me messages on her phone from her mother's group of my consultants that have helped her mum sleep. Yeah, it's insane.
I feel like you really then maybe post Essie start to enter this phase where you're really building your businesses or business with all these different sort of businesses under it or offerings under it.
Yep.
And also from now and then you're growing your family. So now you obviously have 4 kids. At that time you had 2.
Had 2.
We can stay on this one for a while because there's a lot to this. There's all these sleep offerings and feeding offerings under your umbrella. And then eventually, somewhere along the line, you become a mother of 4. Talk to us through this journey. How do you sort of figure out the products and offerings And how did adding new babies into that mix go?
Oh my God, it was chaotic and it still is chaotic and I think it will be forever. So a bit of context, Ambrose is from a really big family. He's one of seven, I'm one of five. So we both knew that we always wanted a big family. We always thought we were going to have four boys. I always just never thought I would ever have a girl. And here I am with three girls and one boy. Is there any more babies? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to say never. I'm not going to say yes. I don't know. I can't ever close that chapter yet. But in terms of how have we done it all and how have we grown our business, it's basically gone off what people, their needs, like especially as a midwife as well, heading into the hospital and being like, gone are the days of being strapped to that bloody pump with the wires and the tubing and mum sitting there like this trying to quickly pump so the next patient can get the pump. And I thought, this is just so not in today. Like, this is not how today should be. So I came up with, obviously, portable breast pumps were trending. So from there, I created my own, tweaked it a little bit. It's now more powerful than the other big names on the market, which is great. But the idea of it wasn't to beat them. It was to make it more practical for busy mums like yourself, for me, for mums on the run, and those mums that can return to work so much earlier. So, and this is where it also stemmed from. Most mums were going back to 6 months, to work at 6 months because, you know, financially we had to, but they still, that was a lot of our consults. I still want to keep breastfeeding, but I have to return to work. So the portable breast pump came hand in hand with that, with the need for the mums postpartum immediately in the hospital and then those mums that have to return to work. So we started that product. And then, you know, when we were doing our home visits with our sleep consults, I would harp on about, you know, the white noise or the lullabies and the sleepy music. And I thought, I'm paying X amount of money from, you know, the chemist to buy this other brand of a sleep light to bring to my consult. This is ridiculous. Create your own. So from there, I did. And then, you know, I'm all about not having to stick to a strict routine, you know, in your home 24/7 sleeping. Mums need flexibility. They need to get out. They need fresh air. They need socializing. So I created a light for naps on the go, which is our portable sleepy light. So it's kind of really just evolved with me being a mum and what I need. Like instead of having to just shove my iPhone in the pram all the time with a blanket over the top, you know, so they sleep, I'm like, no, I need a little light. I need my phone. So yeah, it's just naturally evolved with what Ambrose and I having four kids and me also going back to work and seeing the gap in the market.
And Ambrose, I think at one stage, as you mentioned, actually worked busy hours, I think owned a gym, and you were very much the primary caregiver. That sort of changed as we've gone through your journey. Talk to us about how that looked and felt then and how it's operating now.
So it's really funny. If you had said to me even 2 years ago that the roles are going to be reversed, that you're going to be pretty much the predominant worker and Ambrose is going to be the stay-at-home kind of father. Because when we were, for the first, like, what, 4 years of Alfie and Essie, he was working. We have a gym. We still have a gym in Fitzroy, but now we pretty much have other people running it. He's got a really busy myotherapy clinic. So he was literally doing 12-hour
days. Oh, you've got just a bit going on. Just a bit going on.
I know, a lot. And I just said to Ambrose, when I got that anxiety, you know, the relationship counsellor sat us down and said, I can't breathe hearing your story, so I don't know how you both breathe and expect to wake up every day and do what you do without suffocating and falling down. She's like, something has to give. So from there, obviously, Ambrose is a new dad, a business owner, got an understanding of, hey, how can I support my partner who was drowning? So, you know, we started on small commitments like, you know, coming home from work early twice a week instead of coming home at 9 o'clock at night, missing dinner and bath time and all that stuff. So we started slow like that, and then as we've evolved, especially with more kids, he's seen the benefits of seeing the kids grow up and being a part of their lives. And he obviously didn't have that with his dad. You know, back in the day, the dads were the hard workers, the mums were staying at home. He never got that. And he's like, this is actually pretty cool that I get to do this. So naturally, as my business started to go like this, his business, he didn't decline. He just got someone to take over. And then he kind of stepped in as the role. And then it wasn't until 2 years ago when I got the offer to write the book, I was like, I can't do this. There is no way I can physically be a mum, write a book and run this business with you working these hours. So he's like, all right, well, let's mix it up. I'll help at home. And anyway, I remember after like 2 days at home, he's like, if you want me to go back to work, I can. Like, and I'm like,
this is actually pretty bloody hard.
It's actually really fucking hard. And I was like, well, thank you. Anyway, and he's like, you know, how can we make this work where you're still working and, you know, you're the success behind your business, you know, you are now the breadwinner. How can we make this work where him, who's a workaholic, is still getting his cup filled, also being a stay-at-home dad? Anyway, lo and behold, 2 years later from then, we're here now where he is the CFO of the business. We work together every single day. He does all the school pickups, the drop-offs, the footy training, the basketball training. He's very flexible with all that kind of stuff. And I'm in the office most days. But, you know, we tap in and tap out, and it's really funny working with your partner full-time and living together full-time, I feel like we're actually ships in the night, because even though we're with each other all the time, it's not really any conversation. We're working, and then you get home and you're so drained, you don't want to talk to each other. And then, you know, in the nighttime, he'll bring a scout down to me. She wakes up and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's changed. I would never thought we would be here where I'd be pretty much the head of the business. Now he's working full-time with me, but we're still both stay-at-home parents, if you know what I mean.
That's a really interesting one, because when you talk about relationship, in one sense, I can imagine that it can be quite tense working with your partner, but in your context, I can also imagine it's brought about a lot of appreciation for each other's prior roles and current roles. Has it been a bit of a mixture of those things?
Yeah, it really has. And I think, like, I feel like I look back on his work when he was running and opening his gym and running his clinic, and I used to resent him so much because I was like, I hate you. Why are you working so much? You don't need to work that much, you know, blah, blah, blah. You actually do. He had to work that much in the early days, but I feel bad that he worked so hard. He got us to where we are today, and then now it's kind of like my turn to take the reins, if you know what I mean. Like, he got us our first couple of houses, and he's got us to a position now where we can live like this, which is wonderful, and now he's like a part of my business. And it was funny, you know, he's not a very big one for compliments. You know, his love language is obviously acts of service, like he'll bring me a coffee or something like that. And I'm like, hey, I wrote a book. And he's like, yeah, I know. That's cool. And I'd be like, I just wrote a book. And he's like, yeah, I know. Good. That's good, babe. Anyway, and then I heard him, that's what he gives. And then I heard him talk to a friend. He's like, no, I've actually been reading it. It's actually pretty impressive. Like, honestly, like, I didn't realize that she could write like that. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm your partner. So I think now he's really now with this, I mean, he's always had appreciation, but now with this book and seeing it take off and seeing, reading the hard yards that we went through, actually being like, hey, this was actually our life. He's kind of gone, fuck, this is pretty cool where we are, you know, and I really appreciate now what Millie's doing. And, you know, I just feel like the first half of our relationship and life with the kids, it was his hard yards. He really took the reins and, you know, worked 1,000 hours. And then now I feel like it's me, but it's exciting because it's what I love. And now it's my turn to kind of, not shine, but my turn to kind of, you know, put time into what I love as well, aside from being a mother.
It's interesting that you say that he did the hard yards then and you're doing the hard yards now, because if I flipped that, you were also doing the hard yards at home and now he's experiencing what the hard yards feel like being at home. In amongst it, obviously, is magic, but it is hard. Is it interesting now with hindsight that because you're now stepping more into the work role that you see sort of the work side is the hard yards and we quickly forget about
motherhood? I would like to tell you that bloody coming to work is an absolute break. And it's hard. It's hard, but it's fucking a break. And no wonder he's like, oh, I've just got to go to work. And I'd be like, again? And he'd be like, yeah, I do. This is easy. Being at home is undeniably the hardest thing in the world. You know, you may feel like, oh, being at home is watching Netflix and, you know, a cup of teas and catching up with friends. It's not. That's like 0.5% of being a stay-at-home mum if you get the luxury of doing that. Being at home is fucking hard. I now appreciate work more than ever. I never, ever wanted to return to work after having kids, and now I crave this time.
Financially, you've said that you don't really have to go back to work as a midwife, but you love it too much to give it up altogether. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so people say to me all the time, like, why are you still working as a midwife when your business is so successful? And I'm like, I can't be the midwife mama without being a midwife. And midwifery, it's funny. It's, I mean, anyone that's a nurse and a midwife know that you don't do this job for the money. Like, it's not a high paying career. And do I need this job financially? Absolutely no. But this is the job that fills my cup up the most and is my passion. Going into birth suite, even though it's few and far between these days, I still try and get in a shift, you know, once a month, every couple of months at least, to keep my skills up. But there's nothing beats walking into birth suite, seeing your colleagues and helping bring a baby into the world, whether that be a vaginal birth or a cesarean section. There is nothing like it. And, you know, it reminded me when I went back to work. I did a shift a couple of months ago, my first one since having Scout. It was like in a year. And I looked after the most beautiful couple who were actually really successful business owners themselves. And we had so much common ground. And then they messaged me afterwards and I thought, this is what it's about. And takes me back to the roots of why I'm doing all of this. So I will never give away my mid. It doesn't make sense for me personally to give it away. Everyone else is like, I don't know why you're even bothering. Like, Ambrose is like, babe, why don't you just work here full time? You know, you earn more money doing this full time and you do this. I'm like, no, because that's just not, no. Babies, mums is my life.
I guess there's like a parasocial sense of the relationship with your audience online, but that gives you the real sense of actually being in the room still with them too.
Yeah. And you know what's really funny? before we launched our products into Chemist Warehouse recently, we had a click and collect service from my office, and I couldn't believe how many mums were coming in to click and collect. And, you know, some people were like, oh, they're just coming in to fangirl. They're just coming in to do this. I wasn't even here most of the time, but they weren't. They were coming in for a sense of community. And, you know, when mums were coming in here with their newborn babies to collect their double breast pump or their sleepy light or their cozy nips, whatever, they were coming in and then we would just get chatting for half an hour and I was like, and then I'd end up helping them breastfeed or do something. I'm like, I just can't help it. This is what I love and this is the best part of my business and this is why I started my business, is to interact one-on-one with these mums and their babies and their partners. And I just, yeah, midwifery is the best. It's the best.
Now let's get to your book. None other than Penguin reach out to you.
I know.
What did you think when that happened?
I thought it was like one of those hoax emails. And then I, you know, when you get those spam emails and you're like, no, that's spam. That's too good to be true. You've won $500 and you click on, you're like, oh, that's a dodgy email address. So I clicked on the email address and I'm like, Penguin Random House Australia. Oh, I think this is real. I think this is a real email. And my sister's like, it is a fucking real email, you idiot. Anyway, so I read this email and it's like, hi, Amelia. We're big lovers of the Midwife Mama. We've been following you for a really long time. I'm like, following me? Do you? And I'm checking my follows. I'm like, oh my God, they are following me. This is awkward. I didn't even know. You know, we'd love to tee up a time to chat about the potential of a book. And I was like, fuck yes, I love this. Like I always have been a writer naturally. Like it's quite cathartic for me. But the funniest thing is I thought they meant kids' book. Oh, I never I once thought that. They wanted.
Like,
no, I never once. Yeah,
pages.
I was like, oh no, I was like, yes, no, I was like, this would be my dream because that's naturally what I wanted to do in my business is write a kid's bedtime book. So you know, it's time for nonnas now. It's what we do in our sleep consults. You know, we have a bit of a routine. So I was going to create a bit of a wind down routine into this beautiful, lovely book. So I thought, oh my God, this is my time. I'm going to write a kid's book, and I'm on the phone to this lady who like heads Penguin, and she's like, you know, we've been following you for a really long time and we love how you talk. We love your crass language, your swearing. You know, she was this lovely English lady. And she's like, and we'd love for you to write a book. And I said to her, I've got the best title for the book. And she's like, oh, tell me. You were on the same page. And I was like, Nonna's Time by the Midwife Mama. And she's like, Nonna's Time. Oh, were you thinking a kid's book? What were you thinking? And she's like, an adult book. I was like, for fuck's sake. And I was like, yep, okay. You want me to write an adult book? And she's like, yes, Amelia. I'm like, oh, this lady's going to think I'm really not right. Anyway, so, oh, that's, and she would remember that conversation. It was very funny. So, yeah, then from there, she's like, yeah, we've been following you for a couple of years and we think that we want you to write a book.
Wow. So what happens next and how on earth do you find the time to write a book as a mother of three, maybe becoming a mother of four during that process?
I reckon I didn't have Scout by then. Was I pregnant with Scout? I don't think so. Anyway, I think this was 2 years ago. Anyway, she was like, and we'd love you to write a book on this. And I was like, yep, cool. How long do I have? And she's like, generally we give you a year to write a book. And I was like, fuck, how am I going to do? Oh no, maybe I was just pregnant. I was like, how am I going to give birth, have a newborn baby and write a book? Anyway, this is kind of where it came to Ambrose working in the business hardcore, because I all working with, you know, being a stay-at-home dad, should I say, sorry. I was like, okay, this is how my brain works, right? To give you a bit of context. A year turned into, all right, you can have another year. You've just had Scout. Sorry, we didn't realize how intense this time is. Let's give you a 2-year lifespan to write this book. Now, in typical Amelia fashion, I wrote this book in 3 weeks when I had 2 years, in like the last 3 weeks. Yeah. So I remember, and this is how I know.
Then you had Scout when you were writing, basically.
I had Scout when I was writing. This is when Ambrose really took the reins of being a stay-at-home dad, because this is so me with undiagnosed ADHD, clearly, because I was like, right, I've got to write this book. It's due in like a month. What am I going to do? And Amber's like, yeah, cool, just like go write the book. I'm like, I've got a baby on my hip. I can't. So this is when we really sat down and had the negotiation. I've got this massive opportunity. I've left it to the 11th hour. That's when I do my best work. Hey, Ambrose, you do all the school pickups and drop-offs. You have Scout 3 days a week. So he did. It literally, he had Scout 3 days a week for 3 weeks, and I sat my ass in a cafe, the same cafe, all day and typed, and that's how I got my book out.
And how did you navigate all the other components of your business?
I was doing that on the side, and this is like, I'm a really bad sleeper. I'm a really bad night owl. I'd be awake till 1 a.m., so I'd be like nutting. And I've got girls at work for me. Don't forget that. They'd be doing that. My PA would come with me to write books sometimes. Like, she'd be doing the admin next to me. I'd be typing away. She'd be asking me questions. I'm like, yep, no, shh. I got to work. So, yeah, doing a lot of admin after hours and cramming it in when I could. But wow. It's, yeah, I don't know, my brain is like, this is how I've always done things. You know, when I had to write a midwifery assignment, you know, we'd have a month to write it and I'd do it the night before and get really good grades on that. It's just my brain how it works. I'm busy 24/7 and I just make it work somehow. And I don't know how I do it, but I do. And it's paid off for me and it's doing really well.
You're a sleep consultant, obviously for babies, not adults. But how on earth do you navigate? Like, are you feeling really tired all the time?
Or I feel tired 24/7. I feel exhausted even after a really good night's sleep. I actually feel less exhausted when I wake up 20 times a night because that's what my body's been used to for so many years. But obviously Scout's a really good sleeper. So actually when I do sleep well, I'm like, this doesn't feel right for me. I'm not used to it. So like babies, obviously setting up a good wind down routine, I'm trying to implement for myself, but I can't help it. I get a second wind, you know. The Scout and Coco are asleep by 7 and then the older two, they go to bed at like 8:39 now, and then Ambrose really just takes them to bed. Oh, they're easy, they're self-sufficient, and then I jump into bed, put Netflix on, get my laptop out, and that's when I do my best work till about 1 a.m. and then I go to sleep.
You're obviously very much like me in that you're so passionate about what you do that you can't sort of turn that light off. How do you try to focus on your kids? Even like for me, I'm not necessarily working, but I'm thinking about work while I'm in front of them. How do you try and turn that part of your brain off when you're trying to be present?
I'm not really good at turning that off, to be honest. And I'm very guilty of being that mum that constantly has the phone in her face because, you know, my business is on my phone. And, you know, my kids be like, Mum, listen to me. And I'm like, oh, fuck, what? And now I'm like, what? Yes, what? I have to remind myself, put your freaking phone down. I'm not very good at doing it, but I am trying to do it. But my kids are also really understanding, you know, where it's funny. I feel like I'm not present because I'm on my phone and working all the time, but really I am present because we do every school pickup and drop off. They've never done after school care. We make every sport event that they have. When I probably am most present is when I take, so we kind of naturally now have adapted to this time after school, like around 5 to 6, where the kids go outside and play in the street basketball and I'll sit out there with Scout and, you know, she'll burn off some energy before bed. Coco will be running around, Alfie and Essie playing with the street kids. I reckon then I'm really present. I'm just naturally kind of wind down then. But, yeah, something I'm very guilty of not being present enough, and I know that when I get older I'm going to go, God, what, that time was so wasted. Why did you do that? But I've got to remember where I am today is because of what I've been doing.
That is exactly the thought that went through my head last night. Yeah. Like building this thing, being excited. We're about to join a network and it's all happening.
But oh, my God. It's
weighed up with that guilt. Yeah, that's guilt. It's just, it's never ending. But also there's an email that if I don't respond to, I'm sitting there anxious anyway. So I'm already off somewhere else, whether my phone's there or not.
And do you know what as well? I think our kids, everyone's kids are going to know no different. Like, does any parent really switch off and put their phone down and not look at their phone? Like, it's an addiction to us. We naturally scroll without even realizing. I think that's how we fill up our cup in such a busy time. I'm not advocating for that. But also I think when I like look at it, I am pretty present at times. You know, I breastfeed my kids forever. That's our time together. Like, you know, I may not sit and play with Scout on the floor for an hour every day, but I spend time breastfeeding her, talking to her while she's feeding. You know, in the car we play music. So, no, I am present. I think what you said before, the guilt, even when I'm putting in 100% of time, it still doesn't feel like enough. I think I feel this, and my friends are always like, why do you always feel so guilty? I'm like, I feel guilty for putting them in childcare. I feel guilty for not picking them up from basketball training. I feel guilty when I have to, you know, me going to Sydney the other week was the biggest deal because I've never left my kids ever and done something for me. So me and my girlfriend, who's my PA, we went off together and Ambrose stayed at home, which is so rare. Normally I'm the one doing all of that. Yeah, it's funny. I feel guilty all the time. It's weird.
Maybe it's a sign that we care a lot. And you've just reminded me of something, which is nice to look at someone else because you're always kinder to other people, which is that we're all present and not present in different ways. Like we pick up moments.
Yeah,
and
no, you're right.
Other times you just have to forgive yourself. Okay, talk me through a day in the life of you. You have 4 kids. I have 2. I find it hard to imagine, even though I am 1 of 4. Take us through a Monday, a Tuesday, whatever day. What happens?
So let's do a Tuesday because both the kids are at childcare and that's an easy one. So I am a terrible sleeper in a row. That's not even a word, but I'm making it up. I am getting up when the kids get up because I'm awake all night. So I get up at like 7:30. My kids have always been late risers, by the way. No one ever understands how my kids don't wake up at like 6 a.m. or 6:30. They've always been like 7:30, 8 o'clock risers. It's just naturally what they do. So I'm very lucky for that. They sleep in. So we get up together around 7:30. Ambrose is always out of the house by 5, 5:30, whether he's at the gym, at the swimming pool, walking, He's very active, so he does his activities early, and this is where it really works with the school pickups and drop-offs. So we get up at 7:30, the baby's awake, I give the baby some brekkie, the kids will be demanding Nutella toast on the couch while they watch some TV. I'm that relaxed mum, I don't care, eat while you watch the TV, whatever works, we're busy. And then, you know, Essie's always organised. She's like slick back head undressed. She's the one dictating to the rest of the house, Alfie, why is your school uniform not on? Alfie, we have to leave in half an hour. Get dressed. Mum, why haven't you got scout dress for childcare? Everyone hurry up. And I'm like, calm down. So we're always yelling in our household. Kids are shoving food down their throats. Lunch boxes are made generally in the morning. I try and be organised and do it the night before. Ambrose always walks in the door at 8 a.m., makes like 5 coffees before 8:30. That's what he does. And the kids, no matter, it's so funny, no matter how frantic we are, how late we are, we always make it on time. Always. I am this master. My kids could wake up at 8:15 and they are all fed and dressed by 8:30, ready to go. I just cram that shit in. We have to. So it's always chaotic in the mornings, but then Ambrose always does the drop-offs. Coco's always like, Mummy, drop me in childcare. Like, she's the most mummy obsessed. Scout couldn't care less. And I always say to Coco, Mummy can't. I've got to do my Zoom with China, you know, because she says, oh, you got your products in China. I'm like, I do. So Mummy has to do her meetings this morning and then Mummy pick you up from childcare. So, yeah, Ambrose has got them all out the door by 8:35. Kids at school, childcare or kinder, whatever it is. And then, yeah, we're in the office by 9:30 most mornings.
And then what it's happens chaotic. From there? I want to know until bedtime.
Oh, far out. What happens from there? I fuck around a lot. I just pretend I'm busy and I'm not really busy. It's just my brain. No, we can't. Like, I've got the girls here. They're sitting outside in the other part of the warehouse now. We try and have a bit of a team meeting, a bit of a catch up. We either have girls doing consults at home or the team's in here packing orders. Now we've got some big retailers on board. We're busy with that stuff. Ambrose and I are always wheeling and dealing behind the scenes. Like, my list here is mental. And then what do? We get some lunch. I'm a bit of a Uber Eats kind of girl. I spend way too much money on Uber Eats. Ambrose is like, let's just make a salad roll at home. And I'm like, okay, see ya. I'm getting Uber Eats. It's so chalk and cheese. Yeah, and then what? Before we know it, it's 3 o'clock and it's like, fuck, it's school pickup time. Shit. And we're only 2 minutes from the kids' school, but both of my sisters, their kids go to, we all go to school together. So no doubt. And we always have these last minute meetings. I'm always sending my sister messages and they hate me at like 3:05. Can you drop the kids home? Can you drop the kids at the warehouse? But, you know, it all comes around in circles. We all end up picking up and dropping off and looking after each other's kids. So then the kids often come back to the warehouse, but then they want to go home because they're hungry. I'm starving. So I'm generally home by, you know, 3:45 or 4 o'clock. And then the shit show starts. You know, you get half an hour reprieve before you've got to get the girls from childcare. And then you're rushing dinner. And then, you know, Essie's yelling at me to do a school reader. I'm like, can you just relax? You don't need to do it right now. And she's like, but I want to do it now. So she's yelling at me for the reader. Alfie, I'm like, get in the shower. Turn the Xbox off, get in the fucking shower, hurry up, every kid get in the shower and then eat your dinner and then you go to bed. And then the older two, they go to bed pretty easily. The older two are like, I'm not even tired. I'm like, it's 8:30, get into bed, get into bed. And they're like, let me finish this Netflix show. I'm just watching this with Dad. And Ambrose is like the relaxo, like, oh, just let him stay up till 9 o'clock. I'm like, no, because in the morning I have to deal with the shit show of them being feral. Yeah. And, you know, Essie's okay. She can cope on minimal sleep. Alfie can't. He's been like that since a baby. If he doesn't get his solid 10, 11 hours, that kid cannot cope. So I'm always, me and Ambrose butting heads more than anything. Ambrose, get the kids to bed. Oh, leave them up a bit longer. Get the kids to bed. It's just, and then, you know, I jump into bed and then I'm on my phone scrolling on my laptop and then close my eyes and the baby wakes up for 1 feed overnight and then I blink and it's 7:30 and I'm starting my day again.
Wow, that is a journey. Thank you for taking me on that. You obviously specialize in feeding and sleeping. Mm-hmm. What would be your key piece of advice to a new mum on each of those topics if they wanted to make really good sleeping habits and if they really wanted to make breastfeeding work?
So we'll start with sleep. Actually, let's start with breastfeeding because that kind of comes, that's first and then sleep comes second. And I was going to say, if you have a well-fed baby during the day, whether that be breast milk or bottle, you're going to have a more content baby overnight. I think my best piece of advice, especially as a midwife when I send my patients home, is don't expect your baby to be sleeping through anytime soon. That's not normal. And secondly, that's not going to happen. Those babies that do sleep through early on in the piece, that's their genetics. And I don't care what anyone tells me otherwise. You can do any routine you want from day one and you can't guarantee your baby is going to sleep a 6-hour block. If they do, amazing. But we've got to remember the first 3 months postpartum, that's meant to be dedicated to obviously bonding with your baby and getting to know their feeding cues. And then once you establish really good breastfeeding or bottle feeding, sleep comes second to that. And I think my best piece of advice is, obviously, don't expect your baby to sleep through straight away. That's not realistic and that doesn't happen, and I'm sure you can vouch for that as a mother.
Very much so.
By week three, week four, you will see yourself probably naturally getting some longer block because, you know, your milk supply is starting to establish. By 6 weeks, your breastfeeding supply is pretty much established properly. They're really into their second big growth spurt. You kind of get to know your baby by then and how to feed well by then and a little bit of a gentle routine. But really spend more time at home fucking relaxing and not rushing out to get it all together, because I was that mum with Alfie, like, oh, I'm going to go to the shops. I'm going to go catch up with my girlfriends and I'm dragging this baby here, there and everywhere. And then it all just turned to shit. And I was like, I am so tired. And now I look back and I'm like, why wasn't I that mum that sat on the couch all day in their dressing gown? I wish I was that mum, because that's what I crave now. And I never did it. So take your time. Take your time and enjoy being a mum and enjoy the mess and the chaos. And don't worry about anything, because you have your whole life to get it together after that.
I actually am going to selfishly now ask you for a piece of advice for me. Posey is 15 months old.
Oh,
she's loving a wake up.
Loving, so scared.
I'm trying to wean her. Mm. It's not quite working. What would you do if you were, I can't even get my sentence out. What would you do to try and develop better sleeping habits if you were me? She just screams for the boob and wants to stay on, like doesn't want to get off.
So you know what's really funny? Obviously Scout's the same age as Posey girl, but Scout is obviously my really good sleeper. Her and Alfie, obviously after sleep school, Alfie was the best sleeper. And now Scout is just naturally a really good sleeper. Very different personality to the other girls who never slept at all. Essie didn't sleep in her bed until she was fucking in prep. Scout has all of a sudden at 15 months started to wake up every fucking hour, and I'm like, what is it? Are you hungry? What is it? Are you sick? You know, and she did have a really nasty virus. She's recovered from that. And I'm like, cool, you're happy as during the day. You're not sick at all. You're going to sleep all night. And then last night, I'll give you an example. I put her down at what time? 6:30 last night. She had a 4.5 hour wake time before her last nap of the day in bed, and she was tired, put her down, out like a light, an hour. So not even 45 minutes, an hour later, she woke up. Never wakes up after I put her down for at least 6-7 hours if she's going to. Do you think I could get her back down to 11?
That makes me feel better.
These fucking split nights, And, you know, I've got to remind myself is at 15 months, this is very developmental. You know, separation anxiety peaks. They now stand at the end of their cot. They get me out. They want comfort from us by feeding. And this is when, like, she was nearly weaned. Like, we were down to, like, literally one pissy feed a day. Now she wants the boob. She opens up my dressing gown. She's like, milk. And I'm like, what the fuck? She's turning into Coco, wants the milk for comfort and to settle. And, you know, like you, I was trying to wean as well, but because she was so sick, I was like, I'll just have the boob, whatever. So I'm in the same boat as you. So what I want you to know is it's very developmental at this age, at 15 months, you know. Is Posey walking yet?
No, she's not. She's getting closer, but she's not.
So Scout, so very much the same. They're learning to want to walk. They understand separation anxiety. They understand the fear of when you shut the door, mum's gone now. It's dark in here. I don't like it. It's scary. This is shit. I need more awake time. I want a party. They've got FOMO. You know, she wants to stay up and party with the big kids. And I'm like, no. And she's so awake that you think you're not even tired. But
yes, you look at them and you're like, it's 4 a.m., but you are not going back to sleep.
Yeah, I know, but they're actually overtired. It's really funny. The cortisol makes them look like they're off their heads and ready to start the day. So like you, I'm going to give it a few more nights. And if not, I'm just going to do some gentle sleep training and be like, babe, you're not living on the boob again. And I've got to remind myself, and this is a reminder for you as well, whilst, you know, we think it's all like, oh, they need the boob, they just need me at the moment, it's actually can be end up being quite detrimental because they end up getting so exhausted and it becomes a nasty habit where you and I are so tired, we just in autopilot, yeah, cool, get on the boob, oh, whatever. You got to remind yourself that it's detrimental for them, they need that sleep. So a little bit of us being like, no Posey, no Scout, it's time for nanas now, a quick feed and then you're going back to bed, and a little bit of whinging. And generally, like last night, I let Scout do a little bit of whinging instead of just going in there to save the peace of the family. She went back and slept 9 hours straight last night, which is the first time in a long time.
Oh, you needed that.
But before that was hourly wakings. And I was like, this is so fucked up. And, you know, during the day I was increasing her calories, her proteins. I'm like, you're obviously hungry going through a growth spurt, which sure. But if it goes on for longer than 2 weeks, you know it's really like it's time to sleep train. Yeah. It just becomes habit. And you and I are in survival mode and this is what you do at this age. And when you're a busy mum, yeah, and I think that's why my sleep business is so successful, because I'm realistic and I'm not a hardcore sleep person. Like, I hate the word sleep training. I'm very realistic and I'm like, It's funny, you're trying to wean, I'm trying to wean, but also we still hold on to that. We're not really ready to wean, but we feel like we need to wean. It's just
100%.
It's such a mixture, isn't it?
Such a mixture. You also bring up something quite interesting when you talk about the separation anxiety. I'm about to start childcare with Posey. Ray actually went at 10 months, so she's starting a little bit later, which I'm now thinking might be a bit of a scary age to start if she's starting to get separation anxiety. You've done it 4 times. What's your best tip for me starting childcare?
So my best tip for you is that they're not going to sleep. She's not going to sleep during the day for the first couple of weeks there at least. So you're going to get like a pissy 30-minute sleep if you're lucky. She's going to be feral. She's going to wake up more than ever overnight because she's going to miss you. She's going to want her mummy. She's going to make up for her calories during the day and her sleep that she's lost. So her cortisol levels, which is the stress levels, that will naturally be higher, not because she's part from you, because she's not sleeping well there because it's a new environment. So you can expect very disrupted day sleeps, which is in turn going to disrupt night sleeps naturally. So, yeah, focusing on like this is where I really am gung-ho about the early bedtime. And, you know, as parents, we have that debate, butting our heads against the wall going, but I haven't spent any time with them, so I feel like I need to spend time with them in the afternoon. No, they just actually need bed, and selfishly you need to just put them to bed. So this is when, like you would have seen me the other night, I was giving Scout, I give her on the childcare nights, she has her dinner in the bath because she's too tired to be fucking sitting in that high chair. And, you know, even now that she sleeps well at childcare, she's really tired. It's a big day. You're socialising, she's practising her skills, she's stimulated. So, yeah, early dinners, early baths, expect your nights to be rubbish. But then once they get into the swing of it, they're a bit of a routine, she'll naturally adapt and sleep better. But one thing I do really recommend with childcare babies is put them in 2 days, not one. Whether that be, is she doing 2 days?
She's actually starting with 3. So Ray started with 1 and gradually worked
yeah,
up
that's
to 3.
What I did.
Instead,
yeah.
I'm going to do half days of 3 from the get-go and then build up.
Yeah, that's
hours.
A great idea. Because generally, and the educators will tell you this as well, those babies that just go 1 day a week find it really hard to settle because you almost need that 2 days to create that bit of a routine. I just find those babies that go more regularly adapt easier naturally.
Yeah, well, their memories would be so different to ours too. So it's
well,
like it allows
right.
them to get attached to the educators that look after them in a way.
But our children are creatures of habit, so she'll adapt very quickly. She may not like it, but she'll adapt quickly. And before you know it, she'll be waving you off and wrapped to go and see her friends. And she will start sleeping longer day sleeps there. But I always, you know, and we have parents come to us, particularly during this period of sleep is a nightmare. And it is because they're overtired and they miss you. And there's a whole range of things going on. So just expect that the first couple of weeks are going to be rubbish, but then after that it'll be their new normal, and then you'll probably end up having a third baby and then maybe a fourth and go, oh my god, I can do this, what am I going to do? And then you're back to it again.
Oh, I've loved talking to you. You are an absolute hoot and a wealth of knowledge. If you could look back at what the Amelia of, let's say, 24 years old would think about what the Amelia of today has created, what do you think she would say?
I would say I can't believe that you aren't a full-time stay-at-home mum, because that's what I always envisioned that I wanted to do and that I was always going to be. You know, my mum was a stay-at-home mum and I always thought I was going to be that because that was the dream, you know, to be with my kids all day, every day. And then when I got into it, it wasn't that fun doing that 24/7. So I wouldn't believe that I'm here today with a book, with a business, where I am with Ambrose working with me and actually having people work for me that I pay a wage to, like, that is just insane. I thought I'd be a stay-at-home mum working the odd midwifery shift, but here we are.
Wow.
Here we are. I know.
I've absolutely loved chatting to you. If people want to find you or any of your products or offerings online, where should they go?
themidwifemama.com.au or my Instagram. And we have a really big team behind us that work 24 hours a day in my Instagram, because that's naturally a village for these mothers. I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of DMs I get a day. We get over 500 and people say, no way. And then I'm like, yeah, look at this. And we're scrolling and they're like, I literally have a team to manage my Instagram. I'm still on there as well. But if you need help, if you're unsure, please message us. We will always get back to you. And I just want to say one thing. My Instagram is always open. Mental health is a real thing. And I have a lot of mums messaging me battling and feel really unsupported by their partners or whatever. And I always say to them, go to your GP. It doesn't hurt. Go to your GP if you don't feel mentally well. And I just want to say that because that's a really big thing that I believe in, because a lot of my Instagram is mums like you and I battling, and it can get better. So if you don't feel 100% mentally sound, please see your GP. There is no shame and no harm in doing that.
A great piece of advice to end on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Chat soon.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod.
That's it for today. We'll see you next time.